genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brain.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Oh, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turning now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're live every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. You can also hear us streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is smart radio with sharp questions aimed at intelligent guests. It's talk radio done right for the 21st century. If you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008, or if you're outside of the area code, it's area code 805-639-0008. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is refocusing. Each of my guests will help us to refocus our attention on a particular subject. My first guest was instrumental in the Watergate investigation and trials 40 years ago. He served jail time because of his convictions. With the help of Robert Merritt, he now has strong convictions that Watergate was a complete deception. We'll discuss his theory from his book, Watergate Exposed. My second guest wants to help us change the way we look at the way we can be more innovative. We'll explore his groundbreaking techniques from his book, Look at More. My third guest is a Harvard Business School professor dedicated to helping high-achievement individuals turn their fear of change into fuel for success. We'll discuss his methods from his book, Flying Without a Net. And if you want to call in and ask a question of any of my guests, you can call us at 639-0008. Douglas Caddy was educated at Georgetown University School of Foreign Services, where he got his BS degree, and New York University Law School, where he got his JD degree. While a student, he developed a right-wing opinions and, as a teenager, became a strong supporter of Barry Goldwater. In September 1960, Doug and William F. Buckley established the far-right group Young Americans for Freedom, YAF for short. After graduating from New York University School of Law in 1966, Doug went to work for General Foods Corporation. Doug left General Foods and joined the Washington law firm of Gall, Lane, Powell, and Killicham. In 1970, E. Howard Hunt became a client of the company, and when Charles Colson invited Hunt to join the White House staff, Doug provided him with a character reference. On June 17, 1972, Frank Sturgis, Virgilio Gonzalez, Eugenia Martinez, and Bernardo L. Baker, and James McCord were all arrested at the Democratic headquarters in Washington, D.C. at the Watergate. Doug and Joseph Rafferty arranged to represent Sturgis, Gonzalez, Martinez, Barker, McCord, Hunt, and Liddy. On July 10th in 1972, Earl Stubert filed a motion to compel the testimony for Doug Caddy, and there were 38 questions. Eventually, Doug went to jail over it. And then in recent years, surprisingly to me, Doug has moved more to the left. He describes himself now as a progressive liberal who supported Al Gore for president in 2000 and Howard Dean for president in 2004. He now belongs to the People for an American Way, ACLU. Welcome to the show. How are you today, Doug?
Just fine, and thank you so much for inviting me.
Well, our pleasure, and you've got a very storied past. It's all tied into a very seminal event in American history, and that's the Watergate break-in. This is the 40th anniversary of the Watergate break-in, and your book really revises what we thought we knew about this tumultuous period in American history. Your book recaps the history told to you by Robert Merritt, who is a confidential informant for the military intelligence. He was on assignment with the Washington, D.C. Metro Police, and he's also gay. So how did Robert Merritt gain access to the information about the Watergate break-in that he shared with you?
Robert Merritt was recruited by the Washington, D.C. police by Carl Schaffler, an officer there, in 1970. And in 1972, he learned from one of his own sources, Robert Merritt did, of the planned break-in at the Watergate. He learned about it 2 weeks in advance by someone, a friend of his, who operated a PBX telephone exchange in an apartment complex a block from Watergate. And that person had the habit of listening in on telephone conversations. I should not have been doing so, but overheard the planning and informed Robert Merritt, who in turn informed Carl Schaffler, the police officer, of what he had learned. And Carl Schaffler, the police officer, was actually a military intelligence officer, and he, rather than taking it to his superiors in the police department, he decided to set up the burglars, and so he, with the prior knowledge of the planned break-in. So using triangulation, he sent a message to them, which they accepted, so to speak, not knowing where it was coming from, that they should move the break-in date from June 18th to June 17th. And when the break-in occurred, he was in a police vehicle just a block away from Watergate and executed the arrest.
Now, that's interesting because we had Frank Sturgis's nephew on the show talking about the break-in and talking about the role that his uncle played in the break-in. And everyone to this day believes that the reason the burglars were caught is because of some duct tape on the door that held the door open so the burglars could go in and out of the office at the Watergate. A security guard there at the Watergate discovered this, took the tape off initially, and then on his next round saw the duct tape back there again, and that's what initiated this whole process. You're saying that that's not true, that this whole thing was a setup. How reliable is Mr. Merritt's story about all of this?
Well, let's explain it this way. Jim Hogan wrote a best-selling book called Secret Agenda. At that time, he was with a major magazine. Secret Agenda in 1984, he was with Harper's Magazine, in which he talked about the relationship between Carl Schaffler and Robert Merritt. And in essence, in the book, Carl Schaffler confesses to having prior knowledge of the break-in. The problem with the investigation of the Watergate case is no attention was made to Carl Schaffler. In fact, in a deposition that he made subsequent to the trials, he disclosed that when he appeared before the Senate Watergate Committee, the questions were perfunctory. They just said, in essence, "So glad to have you here, and thanks so much, and goodbye." So his story was never told. Nobody really looked into this matter. And I will point out that J. Edgar Hoover died about 6 weeks before Watergate took place. Had he still been alive, he would have focused upon Carl Schaffler and the role that Carl Schaffler played in this case, and the history of Watergate would be vastly different. By the way, when you say that I went to jail, actually I was held in contempt of court by Judge Sirica because I refused to answer these 38 questions that violated the attorney-client privilege and the right to the Sixth Amendment.
All right. Now, isn't that the same thing, though? Didn't you do jail time because of that, or were you just under house arrest, or how does that work?
I spent several hours in the D.C. jail there, and then the U.S. Court of Appeals released me. Pending an appeal before that court, they heard the arguments and ordered me to testify. Hmm. This was discussed by Nixon in the Oval Office tapes with Haldeman and Ehrlichman, and Nixon said, "Why didn't Caddy go to take the case to the Supreme Court?" And the reason I didn't at the time was that I and my attorneys felt we had established that Judge Sirica and the prosecutors had so abused the rights of the defendants and what they had done to me. By the way, I'll point out that Judge Sirica on July 12th, which is less than a month after the Watergate case broke, publicly accused me of being a principal in the break-in.
Yes.
Publicly accused me. So he, in essence, was trying to set me up, in my opinion. As it turned out, I was never prosecuted, named in an undoubted co-conspirator, never disciplined by the bar, even interviewed by the Senate Watergate Committee. And so my going into contempt was to establish that the rights of these defendants were being abused. And when this occurred, that's what led to the Watergate cover-up. The defendants, if you read Howard Hunt's book, defendants concluded they were not going to get a fair trial. And this was early on. This all occurred in the first month of the case. And that's why they went off on the hush money and the cover-up, because they figured they weren't going to get a fair trial based on what had been done to me in the first month.
I see. My guest is Douglas Caddy, author of the book Watergate Exposed, How President of the United States and the Watergate Burglars Were Set Up, as told to Douglas Caddy, original attorney for the Watergate 7. Now, Doug, so much of this revolves around two people. That's Robert Merritt and Carl Schaffler, as you said. Now, Carl Schaffler actually had Robert Merritt conducting a lot of illicit and illegal activities, did he not?
That's correct. A number of break-ins, framing people, planting drugs, all sorts of things. This is part of the famous or infamous COINTEL program executed by the government in those days.
Well, and even more than that, I mean, you were, and this is had to be awkward for you, there was a hit put out on you where Carl Schauffler and other CIA agents tried to get Robert Merritt, this person that you got the story from, to murder you way back in 1973 because they believed that you had a lot of intelligence that could hurt both the CIA and the military intelligence. So, my question is, working with Robert Merritt, a guy who tried to kill you some 30-something years earlier, didn't that present some awkward challenges for you?
Well, it did, yes. But I decided to work with him because I felt that he had a story to be told and nobody else would work with him in getting his story told. I first became aware of Robert Merritt's existence in 1977 when I read an interview with him in The Advocate, which was a gay publication, mm-hmm. in which he talked about what you just described, the actions taken towards me. So I felt there was a story there, and by working with him, I would find out. And, of course, this is all spelled out in the book.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Well, then let's turn to Carl Schauffler, who is now deceased. But tell us more about Carl Schauffler. I mean, you know, what is he alleged to have done? What are your feelings towards Carl Schauffler? Just give us some history about this man history seems to have forgotten.
Well, when he recruited Robert Merritt in 1970, Robert Merritt was 27 years old and Carl Schauffler was 26 years old. However, he had been trained by military intelligence at the National Security Agency's wiretap form. That's essentially what they taught wiretapping and so forth, that they had a station or a farm, they called it, there in Virginia. So he was skilled in this area. He was assigned by military intelligence in 1969 to the Washington, D.C. police. Mm-hmm. And he felt he came into contact with Robert Merritt and concluded that Merritt would help him in his attempts to infiltrate the far left. That's who they were concentrating on, the far left organizations and individuals in those days. But my conclusion is that both Robert Merritt and Carl Schauffler had character flaws. They were both, in essence, sociopaths. They had no conscience about what they were doing, to give you an example, they would make phone calls to employers to have people fired and make up the basis for doing so. Mm. And I mean, this was a common practice of dozens and dozens of individuals who lost their jobs for no reason at all.
Wow!
And they had no conscience in doing this. And Robert Merritt describes this in the book, where they just sat at a payphone, dropped dimes, and made the phone calls.
Boy, that just dates it. We don't have payphones anymore to speak of. My guest is Doug Caddy. We're talking about the Watergate break-in. He's got some interesting and controversial new evidence that he brings to light based on some interviews that he's done with Robert Merritt. And now Robert Merritt contends that it was the intelligence agencies and even Mark Felt of the FBI. They worked together to manipulate the media and to take down President Nixon. So I've got a couple of questions just about that whole premise. First of all, why did they want to take down Nixon after he had just been reelected? I mean, if they wanted to get Nixon out of office, why didn't they do it in 1972 when he was up for reelection?
Well, there's a book called Silent Coup, written by Lynn Kulodny, which discloses, and it was a bestseller years ago also, which discloses that the military intelligence had a secret operation inside the White House. And actually, they had a liaison from the Pentagon there who admitted ultimately that he stole 5,000 documents from the briefcases of Henry Kissinger and Richard Nixon on their trips abroad.
Wow.
And so they had an ongoing spy operation there against Nixon. They were upset with Nixon because of his opening to China. And the CIA was upset with Nixon because he had indicated he was going to reorganize, if reelected, he was going to reorganize the agency. If you remember, right after Nixon was elected, he demanded the resignation of every appointed official in his administration. He had decided to clean house, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, this never came to pass because of all his legal problems.
Yeah, no doubt about that. My guest is Doug Caddy. Well, Doug, going back to this whole conspiracy theory and the size and the magnitude of it, I guess my other question is, when you have so many people involved, even though they are part of the clandestine society of spies and that kind of stuff, there are so many people involved. Why haven't we heard more about this in the last 40 years? Why was there no deathbed admission or conscience-cleansing confessions that have come out from these guilty parties prior to now?
Well, the information held by Carl Schauffler and Robert Merritt was held by only those two individuals. As long as Schauffler was alive, Merritt feared for his own life and for his well-being.
Sure, but Schauffler died in 70 what? He was 51 years old. So
no, he died in 1996.
Okay, so it's been more than...
He was 51 years old, yes. 1996, okay. Yeah. It took that, strangely enough, it took, according to Robert Merritt, and I believe him, it took that much time for him to gather the papers and the records together that he needed. And he went to an individual in Washington who represents writers and an association executive, and for years attempted to have try to find someone to help him write his book. Ultimately, they came upon me, and so it just took that long for the book to be published.
I see. All right, my guest is Douglas Caddy, author of the book Watergate Exposed. It's a fascinating read. Now, one of the reasons given in the book that they wanted to assassinate you, and they were going to use Robert Merritt to do this, is because they felt that you had knowledge of the inner workings of the CIA, inner workings of other spy organizations, including military intelligence, and that somehow or another you had stumbled upon information about the death of John Fitzgerald Kennedy somehow being related to the CIA. So I'm going to ask you, is there any truth to the fact that that Kennedy was killed by the CIA, or do you have any knowledge of that fact?
Well, my client in Watergate was Howard Hunt.
Yes.
I met Howard Hunt when he came to work for the Mullen Company. I was assigned by General Foods to work out of the Mullen Company as a General Foods employee. The Mullen Company was a CIA front. And Howard Hunt was a longtime employee of the CIA, and on his deathbed, and this is available on the Internet, you can listen to his deathbed confession in which he discloses and gives the names of those individuals from the CIA who were involved in the assassination of Kennedy. He says it was he said at the top of the pyramid was LBJ, but it was those who executed were CIA agents, and he names it on his deathbed, and that's Howard Hunt, who was in Watergate and Bay of Pigs and everything else in Watergate, so to speak.
Wow, fascinating. My guest has been Douglas Caddy, author of the book Watergate Exposed, How the President of the United States and the Watergate Burglars Were Set Up, as told to Douglas Caddy, original attorney for the Watergate 7. Doug, if people want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go?
The book is available on Amazon.com, and I suggest they go there, and also... if they type in into Google either my name or Robert Merritt's name, a lot of material will come up.
There is a lot of material there, no doubt about that. Doug, thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Oh, you're my pleasure. We'll talk to you soon.